Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gok Maharaj.
And welcome to Defrag. Sorry we've been gone. We're back.
We're
kind of back.
Partial, but kind of back.
Yeah. We were in Russia. I was in Russia for Imagine Cup 2013. And then,
how'd that go for you?
It was interesting. It's always interesting to see a new country.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much lived on Snickers bars.
Oh.
Yeah. And
but at least they're mad at real sugar, right?
Probably. I assume so. They do taste different. They're a little more creamy than the Snickers in America.
Right.
It wasn't, you know, just that a lack of food or anything. I was preparing for Defrag. I was trying to bulk up and, you know, gain some weight for the show because I'm a method actor when it comes to tech support. So, I was in Russia, and then I got really sick. I was sick for like a week and a half. And you can see here, I'm blaming it on bear pox from Russia. So that's me and the bear. They've got a bear that
poor
just
bear.
Was sitting. Yeah, that bear was thrilled. It sat there drinking juice out of a bottle
pretty
much all day.
I thought it was
day.
Beer for a second.
No, or vodka.
Or vodka,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. No, it was just, and that picture is the last time I remember feeling well. And so I blame bear pox for whatever got me sick. So yeah, that was that. But we're back, and here we are, and we're going to shoot two shows next week. We have so many questions that we're not going to get through them all today, but yeah, here we go. So first question from Edward. I'd like to be able to dual boot Windows 2012 server from a partition, Windows 8 from a VHD. When I'm in Windows 2012, I would like to Hyper-V the Windows 8 VHD that I use to dual boot. I am new to visualization, don't know its limitations. I'd like to be able to natively access a graphics card for gaming when directly booted to Windows 8, but still be able to access the machine virtually when the Windows 2012 is running. I do not believe remote effects would give me the performance I need.
Okay, so a couple of things on there. So he's running Hyper-V, he wants to use a VM, but he also wants to natively boot that VHD.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, once you set up a native boot VHD, you can't use it in a VM again unless you resys prep it. Now, obviously, if you're constantly dual booting in that manner, that's going to be really, really like time consuming.
Mm-hmm.
So we really wouldn't recommend it. He's saying that remote effects might not give him the performance that he's looking for. He should actually try it because remote effects is actually pretty fast. It does take advantage of the hardware. So I'd actually try it before he technically dismisses it.
Okay.
If you got a beefy card, make sure you have all the drivers installed on server. You have to install the IHV drivers on server, or else it'll by default just use the standard inbox ones.
Yeah.
You could also just leave it as a VM always if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And then you have Windows 8 with client Hyper-V. You could just create a, you know, regular booted Windows 8 system if you wanted to, like, share the applications that are installed that are running at that time, or you could, move that to a separate machine and set it up as a rail server, a remote effects server. That way, you know, your server can TS into it, and your client machine can TS into it, and you have all your applications installed in one location.
And how would gaming be on this setup? Would it? What's the overhead on that? Would it still be a decent gaming machine?
You would never get the same performance as you would with a native booted system.
Yeah.
But depends on what you're using or what game you're playing and, you know, what effects that you're really trying to get out of it.
Okay. All right. All right. From Benjamin, I have a machine that came with Windows 7. However, I plan on replacing the hard drive soon and don't want to restore from my OEM recovery media. Is it possible that I install a plain Windows 7 Home Premium SP1 ISO on this machine without needing to purchase a new activation key?
You can, but you have to use OEM media.
Okay.
So if you can get that media from your OEM, then great. I am personally not a fan of the OEM recovery media as well. Otherwise, you would have to purchase your media, and then you'd have to use a retail key.
Okay.
Which would nullify your OEM key, or wouldn't nullify it, it's just you wouldn't be using it.
Yeah.
So you'd be paying for two licenses.
All right. From Sterling, and by the way, I'm a big fan of your engines. Can you talk about why the tiles in Windows Phone 8 can all be set to one color, but the same can't be done in Windows 8? Sometimes I think the start screen can look a little busy with the combination of background, image, accent color, and tile color. I don't mind that each tile has its own color, but if I could, I would go into the start screen and set all the color tiles the same. Do you know if it's possible to change color tiles so that they all are the same like on Windows Phone 8?
Well, actually, if you have Windows Phone 8 and... if you take a, take a look. Zoom in if you can.
Yeah.
So not all the colors are actually the same. I have an orange theme on my phone, but even the inbox apps like music, Xbox games, Pandora, they all have their own colors, and they don't stabilize to the theme that you pick out. So it's actually a two-factor thing. The apps that get installed have the choice. They can either choose to go to the background theme color, or they can override with their own. So unfortunately, you can't actually change that. And it's the same way as it is on the desktop. You can't change the background color of the icon because, well, it's an icon. You can, edit in a Resource Hacker and start changing colors that way or replacing icons that you can on the desktop, but unfortunately you can't do that on the Windows Store app side. What I can say is that we've heard this feedback and you may be noticing something in the next version of Windows.
Okay. All right. From SW Handyman, this was a comment from the last show in the show notes. It said, it was mentioned in the show that icon overlays are discouraged from use. If icon overlays are discouraged from being used, what is being recommended as a replacement for them? I don't know of any other method that provides at-a-glance file status information so effectively. Even SkyDrive for desktop uses it.
Yes, SkyDrive uses it. There is no really good replacement for it. It's basically what kind of information are you trying to convey and why do you need at-a-glance information that is not available through, say, the properties or through the status bar, which is generally what we're looking for to replace the overlays. Overlays are resource hungry. They often get in the way of each other.
And for and someone who doesn't limit. Know, explain what an icon overlay is. Just
an icon with. Overlay, I wonder if I can show one here. So an icon overlay would be like this lock icon, or here, this pictures has this tiny little cloud over it. That's a SkyDrive overlay. It's just an indicator on the regular folder or file that says there's something special about it. Unfortunately, with icon overlays, they're confusing because people don't actually know what they are, and we don't really tell them. There's no good way to say what this is, and they conflict. So if you have multiple things that are trying to put an overlay on something, only one is going to win because you can't have multiple overlays. So it all just gets very visually confusing, which is why we are discouraging their use.
Yeah. Okay, from Chris, I've noticed in Windows 8 that when I shut down, my workstation seems to not actually shut down. I noticed this while using Mouse Without Borders. If I happen to close Mouse Without Borders and then shut down, Mouse Without Borders will not auto-start.
Yes, this is a new feature for Windows 8. It's called Hyperboot. What it essentially is, and you can emulate this in previous versions of Windows as well, is a user log off and then sitting at the logon screen will hibernate your system. So that your services that are currently running, they don't need to be all reinitialized because more often than not, they don't really need to be. If you're fast user switching aware, which most applications have been since XP, this is not a problem. So we do away with all the service initialization and we just resume from hibernation and then you're at your logon screen, just as if you would be if you had cold booted your system.
Yeah.
Now you can turn this off. I don't necessarily recommend it.
It will only allow because, your machine to start a lot faster.
Yeah, which is the only reason why I don't really recommend it.
Yeah.
Um, Hybrid sleep, hyper boot.
While Gove looks for this, I'll play a little
here it is.
Music.
Power option system settings. I so hardly ever go in here. Okay. The shutdown settings is turn on fast startup.
Yeah.
You can disable that. But again, it's not really necessary. You can do a full shutdown if you use the shutdown command line utility.
Yeah.
If you do a restart, it is a full restart. So this is really, by turning it off, you're not buying yourself anything. You're, in fact, wasting time. You know, for those of you that actually do shut down your system.
Yeah.
Myself, I never shut down the system. Unless I have to every
sometimes I do want to do like a real restart, but you just do a restart.
You just do a restart, exactly.
No boot from nothing. Okay.
Yeah, and if you're installing updates or something like that, the one of the shutdown options, I don't think it will show up for me because I don't have any pending updates, is there's a install updates and restart, and then install updates and shut down.
So how do you get Mouse Without Borders to work correctly?
Mouse Without Borders, for that case, all you'd have to do is create a scheduled task for it.
Okay.
And do it at user logon.
Mm-hmm.
And then that will start it up when you're logging into the system again, even after a fast reboot.
Okay, cool. All right, from Rico, who Rico says he's our biggest fan. Hey guys, love the show. I have a Windows 7 VM I've been using in VMware Player. I just upgraded to Windows 8 Pro and I want to use Hyper-V. Is it possible? Can I have my VMware Windows 7 VM to run in Hyper-V?
You can, but you can't do it with the VMware Player. You need the VMware Workstation. You can download a trial of that. If you load up your VM into the VMware Workstation, there's an export out of the file command and it'll save as VHD. And that's really all you got to do. It's really rather simple.
All right, and so the other thing, too, is Rico being our biggest fan, 1-9 guy. And
okay.
So I wrote him back and I said, hey, you know, give me your address and I'll send you a 9 guy. And he was so excited that Larry Larson had written him. I actually feel kind of sad. Simmer down, kid. It's not that exciting. But, yeah, here's a 9 guy, and he asked us to sign it. So there's my signature. I'm going to put some crooked Harry Potter glasses on this cat. And there's yours. You can do that too. We'll just mark up the desk with all kinds of wet Sharpie. So here you go, Rico. That's for you. We'll send it out to you today. All right, from Toby. Oh, and by the way, if you want a 9 guy, just send us a postcard. So you can email me, larrylaw@microsoft.com. I'll give you an address, but send a postcard. We want to hang him up in the studio. We love that. All right, from
Toby.
The more
interesting the postcard, the better.
Oh, come on. I can't wait to see this.
This will be fun.
Yeah, yeah.
We can have a wall and people can vote and it's like, which one has the best, coolest postcard?
We'll let you code that. Awesome. All right, from Toby. If my computer has bug checked a few times, how many bug checks do you think you'd take before flattening? Also in Windows 8, there's now the refresh and remove options. Would you recommend these over booting off USB and installing to a formatted drive?
So this kind of problem is not like, you know, spin the wheel of misery and see how many bug checks it takes in order to flatten your machine without actually knowing the cause of the bug check.
Yeah.
If, you know, you've installed a driver for it that is misbehaving and you do that again if you clean install the system, then you haven't actually solved anything.
So if you're getting like a bug check that's your video card driver,
mm-hmm.
and if it happens 10 times a day,
I'd be annoyed.
But it wouldn't be a like flatten your machine thing. It would be, do you have the latest drivers kind of thing?
Well, do you have the latest drivers? You can also roll back to your inbox drivers.
Yeah.
A lot of different questions. Was this an OEM machine? Did it come to you in this way? Or is it an upgraded machine that's a little bit older?
Mm-hmm.
The problem with an upgraded machine is that, you know, depending on really how old it is, support just drops off.
Yeah.
And OEMs and IHVs, driver makers, they will tell us, you know, we don't want to support this part anymore.
Yeah.
And then we will try to make it work, but occasionally they don't want to support it anymore because it was actually kind of flaky. And we can't force them to create new drivers for certain hardware, right? Even though, you know, you have a perfectly functional machine and it had an okay driver, it could actually just be a buggy driver and is really difficult when the maker of the driver does not want to produce a fix for it, because they say they don't support it anymore.
And if that driver, it's giving you problems, if you end up reinstalling that after you're flattening, you've just wasted a lot of time.
Exactly, exactly. So we really have to understand what it is that's causing your bug check before we can figure out whether or not flattening the machine is going to be helpful. So send the memory dump, send your event logs.
Or just a description at first. I mean, tell us what you're seeing and stuff. And
well, the memory dump is going to be more helpful. And as well as any software that you might have installed, because a lot of times this could be an interaction thing. So as much information as we can get is going to be the most helpful. But no, honestly, I would not flatten it at this point, because you could just be wasting time. However, what I would suggest is perhaps creating a VHD that you'd boot off of, because that way you're not flattening your old system, but you're setting up a new one just to see if, as a test bed, to see if you're going to have any issues. And by doing that, you can start individually installing drivers, or you can just boot it up, let it run for a while, get Windows updates on it, see what happens. Is it stable? Is it not stable? You could either keep going with a boot from VHD, which is actually what I tend to do on my various machines, is I just boot from a VHD all the time. They're pretty simple to set up, and they're portable.
And what about the options in Windows 8 now to do like a refresh and
restore? The refresh will take less time than a full install. So yeah, I'd exercise that.
It's
nice and simple, right? Depending if it's an OEM machine, then it will restore back to what the OEM customizations were. You don't have to necessarily spend time going to the OEM and downloading it. Or, you know, you could say screw it and just flatten it and do all that stuff yourself manually.
Yeah. Okay. All right, next question. How can I get my home machine to just log in without having to type a password every time?
Wonderful utility called Auto Logons by SysInternals.
By Mark.
We love this tool. I use this tool all the time.
We love Mark.
My Media Center machines use this. I have it logging in with my special account that has access to my media only, but is a standard user account. Same password on all my Media Center machines. Same user, same password. Use this. My machine is basically left on all the time. It's a really low-powered NVIDIA Ion machine with an SSD, so I don't...
Adam. So, is that enough to play HD video?
Totally. I have a Silicon Dust Prime 6-tuner box that will do 1080. Well, it outputs 1080i.
Yeah.
But I've got it set up with 1080p, and it does it perfectly. It'll play Blu-rays no problem. It's the NVIDIA Ion part of it that makes a difference.
Because
it's an older
machine.
It's
pretty quiet, too.
It's very quiet. It's fanless.
Very nice.
I built that machine in, I think, 2009 or 2010. It was in December. I don't really remember when, but it's been running strong.
Don't fix it if it's not broken.
Exactly, right? It's been running along no problem. This is a great tool for you. You set up Windows Update on it just to let it run. I don't have to do anything to that machine.
And so when you install this, it's going to ask for your system password. You plug that in. It's pretty simple.
Pretty simple.
Now, I have had my wife's machine that I've installed this on it twice and set it up, and it still doesn't log in. Thoughts on that? And it's just that one machine, because I use this on a lot of different devices, but that one machine, it doesn't work.
The only thing I can think of for that is that there is some conflict in the logon, and what can... exhibit that symptom is, do you have a fingerprint reader?
Yes.
The credential provider for the software that they use for the fingerprint reader may be interfering with the auto logon portion.
Okay.
So you can try uninstalling it or disabling it.
So do I need to disable the hardware too, or just
uninstall the software? Just the software.
Okay.
I would think
What if I disable the hardware but I don't uninstall the software? Suggested or no?
That'll be undefined. I don't know what it'll do.
Okay. I'll uninstall the software then. Cool.
I mean, especially if you don't use it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not
using it. Or the other option, because you say that your wife doesn't like to use a password, right?
Yeah.
You could also disable auto logins and actually configure the fingerprint thing, and then she can just log into the fingerprint.
True.
That's an alternative.
Could do that.
I know my wife has an HP machine that has a fingerprint logon, and I've set it up that way so that she can log on with her fingerprint, and I can log on to her account with my fingerprint, which works really well too.
Nice.
Because it has a backup,
yeah.
Right? So if I need to get into her system and...
In case she loses a finger or something. You never know.
Well...
You never know at Gov's house.
Because, you know, it's her account, but she's got stuff set up, and if I have to do updates or whatever, I'll do it on her account.
Yeah.
But then, so I've got... One of my fingers will set up to log into her account, and then another finger of mine will log into my account on her machine.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, okay, you don't have to remember passwords. Just forget about passwords. Just use your fingerprint. Or in Windows 8, she's got picture password.
Yeah.
Which is another alternative.
So I set up picture password on this machine when I first set it up, and now I don't remember what the... picture password is.
It is, well, you can...
I set it up again, but...
Well, you can also log in with your password. You can do PIN and password, and I believe it'll give you all the different options to log in. But yeah, the picture password, it has to be something that is extremely obvious to you, yet not obvious to anybody else. It's tricky. It's tricky to find the right pattern for picture password.
Yeah, and you don't want to go left to right, because then you'll use smudges to just recreate.
Exactly. You can't go too complex.
Yeah.
It's an interesting choice, people that use picture password. My wife, she does it.
I loved it at first when I had to use it, but then I didn't use it for so long, I forgot. But, yeah. All right, pick of the week time. Time for the pick of the week, and I'm going to go with... my new absolute favorite game that I've been just playing the heck out of, Kerbal Space Program. Scroll all the way up so you can see what a Kerbal looks like. Yeah.
Kerbals are cute.
This was a thing that kept me busy while I was laying in bed sick. I was playing this on my laptop, and it's a very, very cool game. Starts off, it's just a sandbox. So and you can play the video now. But it's just a sandbox game where you have a whole, like a toy box full of rocket parts, and you can build whatever rocket you want. And you've got these little guys called Kerbals, and they want to have a space program. So the idea is you're going to build a rocket that's going to help them with their space program, get them up into orbit, get them out to the moon, get them to Mars, whatever it is that you want to do. But the really interesting thing with this is it's not a mindless game. You have to understand math, astrophysics, advanced engineering. It's a problem-solving game.
Do you actually have to, like, put in equations and stuff like that?
Well, you have to, like, if you want to get into orbit, you have to kind of understand how orbits work to get the right kind of orbit around a planet to get where you're trying to go.
But is it all just, like, point like, in the right direction? Or do you actually have to say, I want to fire at 33 degrees...
So the nice thing with this, there's a huge community.
33 degrees would be bad.
Yeah. There's a huge community with this, and they've built all kinds of add-ons. So there's some tools where you can, like, plug in coordinates and stuff like that and hit fire, and it'll go. For the most part, the game has, like, a vector tool where you can drag, and you drag in each direction how much you want to go. And it'll give you a targeting reticle that you can use to, like, aim at and then fire the engines. And it has a countdown for how long you're firing the engine. You can watch your orbit in real time on the ship's map.
Sounds like it's fun for all ages.
It is. So, I got a five-year-old. The kids are off for a summer vacation. Just obsessed with this. And I don't know how you get a five-year-old, like, begging to do 400-level astrophysics work without a game like this. But, yeah, it's really cool. And when you launch missions, like you go to the moon, all these missions persist while you're doing other things. So you can launch a mission where it puts someone on the moon where they get stranded, which has happened. I got some Kerbals stuck on different places that, yeah, they need help. And I need someone with a lot more knowledge than me to help get them back. But yeah, we got Bill Kerman stuck on the moon, and so my five-year-old's like, we have to mount a rescue mission. We can make a craft that has a second pod, and we'll go up and we're gonna save him. And it's just turned into a lot more people to rescue. So
now it's a colony.
Yeah. So now I need to build a school bus that goes to the moon and brings all these people back. And
do they expire in space?
No, they'll live. It's like they've got enough resources to live. At least I think they will. They've lived up to now. They're running low on food.
There's just skeletons inside of spacesuits.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's an awesome game, and I've just been playing the heck out of it and really like it. It's a standalone indie game that you can pay for and download. It's like $23 or something like that. And it was also on Steam, which I heard it's the number one indie game on Steam now. So very cool game. Try it out. You'll love it. It'll make you smarter.
Oh, it seems a little bit more substance than perhaps some other block creation games out there.
Yeah, like Minecraft is what you're saying.
I didn't say it.
Still love Minecraft. The kids love Minecraft. And Minecraft is cool, but you're not really going to learn like advanced systems and engineering and staging and orbits and physics. Like my five-year-old, we were first trying to get into orbit. He just couldn't figure out, well, I couldn't either because I didn't know the tools, but he couldn't figure out how to get the right orbit. So I went out and sat on the trampoline and we had some tennis balls. And I was like, try to get a tennis ball to circle around me. And so, you know, he throws it at me and that doesn't work. And then he throws it to the side and that doesn't work. And he finally learned that you throw out and around to get it to do that. And now he understands how orbits work a little bit better. And having eaten nothing but Snickers bars in Russia, I have a lot in common with a planet at this point.
Are you starting to have your own gravitational pull?
I have some gravity. There's some gravity out there on the trampoline. So, yeah, it's a very cool game. You'll just waste tons of hours, but it's not a waste because you'll learn tons of stuff doing this.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, give it a try, and it's a really cute, cool game that
I'd love to see them make this into a Windows Store app.
Yes, yes.
I mean, it looks pretty touch-friendly.
I haven't tried it on a touch device, but I was thinking about that because we have the big PPI display here in the office.
Oh, that would be fun.
And I was like, yeah, that might be kind of cool. I'll have to try that out. But yeah, give it a try and see what you think. Let me know. Say it in the comments what you think, and link to some of your rockets. I want to try out your rockets, too.
Oh, you can share rockets.
Oh, yeah. Once you make a rocket, it makes like a .craft file. And you
awesome.
Can just upload those, share them with friends, stuff like that. So, yeah, very cool. There's just tons of mods for this, like 65 pages of rockets that people have shared.
That'll be really fun.
Yeah, very cool. So that's the show for this week. If you have questions, email us at defragshow@microsoft.com.
Do we still have defrag?
We do. Okay. Yeah, you can use that one if you want. Or leave comments in the show notes. We'll get back to you there. But we prefer the email so that we can have a little back and forth with you. So see you next week.
Take care.